Nick had a part-time job as a security guard, night watchman at the Gulbenkian Foundation. And one day, in the middle of the night, he heard a noise at the front. He went to find out what was going on. And lo and behold, he was confronted by this guy who challenged him and said, "Who are you?" And they both said to each other, "Who are you?" And it turned out that it was the director of the Gulbenkian. His name was Peter Brinson. And he had come in the middle of the night to pick up some papers because he had a very important meeting the following day. And he asked Nick what he was doing. And Nick showed him the copy of Down Wapping that he had, that had only just been published. And it was Peter Brinson who had this idea that he would commission this group to do a much broader project. Really, it was about the projects that the Gulbenkian Foundation were sponsoring and supporting up and down the country. And they were essentially in three areas: welfare, education, and arts. And he thought our project would be very educational, would be artistic, and would be also deal with welfare, the state of welfare in the country. But because we were so inexperienced, our first application failed, and we were invited in to the Gulbenkian, and we were kind of coached. And our second one succeeded, and we were going to receive the princely sum of £5,000 for three photographers for 6 months, for all the costs and all the costs, and we had to pay for our rent back in London as well. So, but we were delighted. It was an opportunity, as they say, an opportunity not to be missed. And we all kind of, we said to each other, right, well, it'll be 6 months, it'll be great experience, and then we can go to do our full-time courses the following year. So yeah, the proposal that was drafted meant that we would visit all the major cities in the United Kingdom. And before we got going, we actually got into a, I think I had a Volkswagen, and we drove, we did a recce, and we drove to Birmingham and Liverpool and Glasgow. We spent a month. I think it was Nick's very first view of Britain. It must have been an absolute shock to him. It's coming from, sunny Australia. And he's there in the grim industrial north, and in the tenement flats of Glasgow. I can't imagine what he was thinking. But anyway, I expected us to work in exactly the same way as we had for Down Wapping, that we would go to a place together, and that would give us a kind of an edge. It would almost be like a film crew coming along, and kind of galvanizing situations. And rather than be on our own, lonesome in some godforsaken town. But anyway, that didn't happen. Chris was quite adamant that we should all go and work on our own in different parts of the UK. Yeah, so I mentioned that we did this recce, and the recce really, we were given a list of organizations up and down the country by the Gulbenkian, organizations, community organizations, or whatever that the Gulbenkian were funding. And actually, that really didn't turn out to be very useful, because what actually on the ground mattered was we had to make those connections. We had to be proactive. We had to initiate everything. And so it was like, whew, a major learning curve. So we would find that, so I'm in my case, I needed somewhere to live. I went to this high-rise block of flats, and I literally just knocked on people's doors and said, have you got a spare room? I'm looking for somewhere to... And in the end, on the seventh floor or the ninth floor, whatever it was, there was a young couple and said, yeah, we've got a spare room. So the Gulbenkian, nobody had fixed that up for me, no one, and the same was the same for Chris and Nick. We understood we needed to win people's trust, and the way we worked was that we would take photographs, we would go back. Don't forget, this is not the age of the smartphone, nor we didn't have Polaroid. We would have to come back. Little prints were made, and we'd go back, return, give them prints. So it was all a long process. We realized, we had 6 months, which is an exceptional privilege for in that period to have 6 months. Most people have like 6 hours if they're lucky, half a day, and that's it. We spent more time transcribing and editing the text than we did editing the photographs. And overall, I'd say we spent more time in the recording and the text, and we're ill-equipped, really. We were photographers, novice photographers. So how we ended up being recording audio and very primitive 70s kit, and spending years and years. There weren't apps to do the translation. We had to do it by hand over and over. As I said, we disagreed about more or less about everything, but the one thing we did agree on was the format of the book. With on the right-hand side, it would be a narrative, four-part picture story. And on the left, there would be this unfolding interview transcripts. And they didn't have to match. And that was a key thing as well. So ordinarily in photojournalism, you have the photograph and then you have the caption underneath explaining what you're supposed to be seeing. Actually, the way we did it, we didn't even know how the text on the left would fall. And in discovering that, we discovered all kinds of nuances, contradictions, subtleties, very interesting kind of dynamic. So it was very consciously a format that was against the prevailing documentary photojournalism idea of doing a picture story. Just to point out, number 15, plinth two, the photographs that you have were actually during the editing phase and was in the flat above me, which happened to be empty. And we squatted it. Actually, what happened was other people had squatted it. I'd heard the noise. They left and it was available. So I said, listen, we need to spread these pictures over 3 rooms. So we basically squatted that. So it wasn't my flat, it was the flat above our base.